Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. So today's episode, I sit down with Adam Hignall. I met Adam, well, we'll talk about this when the episode starts, but I met Adam through our sponsor. As I'm sure you're very aware, our lovely sponsors have been Hotel Chocolat now for close to 2 years, and I met Adam through that. And what we really bonded over was a shared love of music. And Adam's got an incredible career in music and DJing, and we dig deep in all of that. And it's a wonderful conversation. So the reason we done this was it's International Chocolate Day today, and so we thought we'd try and do something special. So I thought, well, Ad, I said, why don't you just come on? I said, like, we talk about music so much whenever we kind of hang out, then why not just come on and do an episode? And yeah, it's a glorious chat. And Adam grew up in one of the most important musical cities in the UK, and that's definitely heavily influenced his creative output and some of the choices that he picks today as well. So you're in for a treat. So before we get on with it, let's get a few thank yous in. So thank you, first of all, then. Let's thank our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat, again. Big thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces podcast. Big thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. And obviously the biggest thanks always go to you lovely listeners. Thanks ever so much. We're over 400 episodes in there. And you guys, you know, the listenership's growing and growing and growing. And, you know, it's so kind when I see these like, loves, shares, retweets, messages on the socials and such. So honestly, I have so much fun having these conversations with these incredible people, and to then sort of throw it out into the world wide web and know that other people are getting you know, a bit of joy from it is a wonderful thing. So thanks ever so much for listening and supporting the podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast any, you know, further, then this is how you can do it. I have a thing called a Patreon. I'm sure a lot of you will know what Patreon is. For those that don't, it's like a kind of crowd support social media platform, I guess. And so it's got a feed on it, and then basically you sign up to it, and then you get access to... I post on there very regular. What you get on the Off the Beaten Track one is you can watch all of the episodes. So I put all the videos up of the conversations. So they're there, ad-free, of course. And as well as that, I put up radio shows. So there's hundreds of radio shows where I'm playing records and talking. There's mixtapes. There's all sorts of stuff. And basically, it's going to cost you $1 a month. So that's, what's that, 80p a month? 20p a week. And you get all of that. But essentially what you are doing by signing up to the Patreon is supporting the podcast, ensuring that twice a week I can still put out these free episodes, and yeah, and it's just a little way of supporting. But we're in tough times, so if you can't afford that, I totally understand. What I will say is if you can't afford that, then do you know what you could do? Give us a little share on the socials, or when you're down the pub, like, nudge your mate and go, have you heard that podcast from that lispy old bloke from Essex where he talks to really cool people about records? Go and check it out. It's called Off the Beaten Track. So that'd be great. Anyway, I've been waffling for too long. Everything you need to know about this podcast, where you can find us on the socials, Patreon and everything, is at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Anyway, I know why you're here. Please enjoy today's episode with the wonderful Adam Hignall. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beat and Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Adam, how are you today?
I'm very well, mate. Yeah, very well. I've survived this week. My wife's been away, so I've been a solo parent since Sunday. I've managed to feed and clothe them and get in to and from nursery and to bed every day. And and she's finally back this evening. So,
and do you know what? In true man style, are you going to almost expect like a pat on the back for it?
Absolutely. Yeah, at the very bare minimum, a pat on the back. I mean, £50 notes I will also accept.
Well, to introduce you to the listeners, we met through, it's World Chocolate Day, so it felt like a good idea to get you on. And the reason that I thought you'd be a good guest is because you work for our sponsor, Hotel Chocolat, and that's how we met. And one of the things we met, apart from talking about the, you know, the sponsorship of the podcast and stuff, I felt that when we sort of initially met, we bonded over our love of music and realizing that you was a musician and you was a DJ, and we had very sort of similar backgrounds in them fields. So I thought, World Chocolate Day, let's get someone from Hotel Chocolat on, and who better than my contact there that also happens to be obsessed with music. So it made sense.
Just so happens to be a card carrying vinyl obsessive.
Perfect. Well, look, Ad, I always start the podcast with track one. And so I'm going to ask you what you regard as being the song with the greatest ever intro.
Yeah. Well, see, I loved your questions. And I just went really instinctive with all of them. What I wanted to do was avoid overthinking it, because there's so many songs.
Absolutely.
You can fall in love with them from so many different parts of your life or moments and all that. But you're asking about the first, and so you just to be honest, the when I was 10 or 11 years old and I heard that Smells Like Teen Spirit intro, I had never heard anything like it before, and it's a cliche, but honestly, it at that age, at such a formative moment, that transformed my life. Life, I can't imagine it would look the same had I not heard that and gone like, wow, synapses just went, something's special about this.
And there is a lot of stuff that's special about that. I was really lucky, Ed. Like, during lockdown, I got to have Butch Vig on this podcast.
Wow.
And I went in on it, asking him, like, you know, what was it like producing that? Like, tell me about that moment. Because I heard that described, that intro, as it feels like all of a sudden the house that you're standing in is collapsing around you when that drops. And it is monster, isn't it? And
those drums, it's just everything about it. And
I reckon that drummer's going to do all right, mate.
He's all right. He's got a bit of talent, yeah. Never know in this industry.
It's ridiculous, isn't it, that somebody that could, and I'm not taking anything away from drummers. Obviously, there's some incredible drummers on this planet. But how many drummers can be the drummer in arguably, you know, one of the biggest bands in history, to then go on and be the singer in one of the biggest rock bands in yeah. history. It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
So
I met him once, actually.
Really?
I met him. I was doing stage and lighting for... This is because I've had a lot of jobs, especially in my younger days when I was really trying to be a DJ. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of jobs that just sort of worked around my schedule and stuff. And one of them, I used to do stage and lighting. So turning up with, UB40 concerts or The Killers or whatever, and just doing all the background stage lighting, bringing on sort of 2-ton trusses of gear and setting it up and stuff. And we had an absolute cast iron rule, like sackable offence, never talk to the talent if you see them. But I couldn't...
Well, you weren't even allowed to just go, all right?
No, weren't allowed to speak to them at all, or make eye contact or, whatever. Just was one of those things. But when Dave Grohl passed me as I was sort of dragging like a 2-ton truss along with his daughter... I just thought, and actually my boss was standing, he's going over to talk to the site manager. And I just thought, I can't resist this. I've got to say something. Like, he's my hero, got to say something. And so I went, right, I'm going to say something. And I put my trust down. I went over and I went, I love you, Dave. That's all I could come up with. He looked at me like with that look and he went, thanks, man.
Do you know what? Like, I reckon a lot of rock stars would have just kind of sneered a little at that. Yeah. Dave Grohl's never going to sneer at that, is he? It's Dave Grohl. Wonderful. Well, in regards to intro, I'm going to ask you, tell me a little bit about how you approach an intro. Let's not talk about music. So ask musicians about that. I'm not going to sort of touch on that side of things. Tell me about when you're DJing, when you take over from the DJ that's been on before you.
Yeah.
What's in your sort of, how do you approach that? Do you think, look, do you know what? I'm not going to, have a great big horn fanfare to welcome me to the turntables. Am I going to be,
I bring my own air horn.
Yeah, about pyrotechnics. How do you sort of approach, your intro to a set?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've always said start with something weird. So get people's attention.
Clear the dance floor. You've got a clear palette then.
Clear the dance floor, start again. We shall rebuild. Yeah, but then you chuck a curveball in there. Because, it's... I think when I started out, I was so sort of desperate to just impress and keep everybody on side that I just sort of mixed seamlessly into what the last DJ was playing, kind of just to keep the party going, keep the vibe going. And that's great. And actually, a lot of the time that was more in clubs, whereas as my DJing progressed, I ended up sort of having slightly different gigs where it'd be more about sort of like I was playing more sort of dance music in nightclubs, whereas I ended up playing more sort of, I suppose, that crossover, like bar stuff where it's like music for kind of listening, but also kind of dancing if you want, sure. Rather than a sort of you've paid 25 quid a ticket and you're in there to rave. But yeah, I definitely started off, just blending into the previous DJ. But maybe it was just, I don't know, your ego gets a bit bigger and you start thinking, I want to let them know I'm here, especially if you rise up the bill a little bit. And so, I would usually try and make some sort of a, I'd never do anything rude. Honestly, it's so rude when a DJ like turns the turntable off and lets it, or does some really, or stops the deck or just, and also if a DJ is just, is playing and their track's just started, I'm going to let it get to the point where it was supposed to get to. I think it's really, I always find it really rude when people do it to me, like just cutting you out as if you're not there. I think that's disrespectful. So with a bit of respect, but yeah, I always try and find something that beat matches but has a little bit of a make people prick their ears up and go, huh?
I've just, as you were saying that about people kind of almost sort of cutting off your song before it's finished, I remember I was promoting a night in Brighton, a venue called The Haunt.
Yes, I know it very well. I've DJed there, actually.
I don't even know if I actually DJed that night, but I was promoting it, and it was a Scroobius Pit Presents night. And Pip was DJing, and we'd secured the headline act was going to be Afrika Bambaataa.
Nice.
So it was, you know, we were super excited, and Bam had DJed for me a few times in Essex, and he's great. And Pip was there DJing away, and I think he had like sort of 10 minutes left on his set.
Mm.
And one of Bambaataa's people just walked up to the turntables as Pip was DJing, and he had like one record playing. And this guy just unplugged the other deck and just put it on the floor, and then just sort of pulled out his laptop or whatever like Bam was using. And like Pip was like, "Huh? Like, what am I going to play the next record on? You've just literally just took my other turntable away." It was very surreal and fucking rude. Like,
That happens. That definitely. I've had a very similar experience. Not at the Horn. Although I was, that was a good gig actually. I was main support for People Under the Stairs.
Wow.
So similar vibe. Mm. I've just got a recording of them somewhere doing a little shout out for me that I was going to put on a record one day and I never did. But yeah, that was a good gig. But yeah, I'm going to not name any names, but a well-known Radio 6 DJ, I honestly don't think there's anything, there was no intent in it. It's just slightly sort of chaotic pre-gig preparation. But I got there to the venue 3 hours before it opened, you know, really excited, wanted to get my stuff exactly. Because, my style of DJing is somewhat technical. I'm not a turntablist, but I did a little bit of scratching, a little bit of juggling, a little bit of performance to keep people interested. And, so I turned up, I did my new mixer. I was really proud of. I had everything calibrated and set up absolutely perfectly, knew where I was going to play. And then when I sort of, 10 minutes before I actually went on, I thought, well, everything's fine. I got there and literally all of my equipment had been scattered around the stage, unplugged and sort of moved. In the end, I ended up in a situation where because of the equipment that had replaced it, I was sort of stuck literally like I could barely reach the turntable to the mixer. I was sort of doing like an octopus to try and DJ. and I could only got one turntable working. So I was just sort of had this, it was interesting. It went okay, but I wasn't exactly able to do what I was hoping to do.
Well, I hope you've never watched Red Dwarf since.
Sorry, Craig. I love you, Craig.
Right, I'm going to ask you for track two to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Oh, cool. That is, that is, yeah. It is a tough one. I know what I said.
You can switch them up. It can, because the thing is, people always go for like heartbreak or sadness. It can be joy.
Yeah, of course it can. But I know, I think it probably was one that, because I think when you're a kid, when you're an infant kid, you're 5, 6, whatever, and you start, like I remember Michael Jackson, Bad, and I was like, wow, that's really exciting music.
Yeah.
But you would naturally, you just, from nursery rhymes upwards, your musical sort of palette is really joyful, happy stuff. And I think you have an instinctive rejection of anything that's sad. Like my son, as soon as I put anything that sounds in any way not like Prozac happy, he's just, can you turn it off please, daddy, I don't like it, it makes me feel sad. But I suppose that, like food, that palate develops over time, and there must always be a trigger point. And I think for me it was listening to my mum or my dad's tapes. I can't remember. They used to listen to stuff like The Carpenters, which can be really sad, but I remember
it doesn't get any more sad than The Carpenters.
No, I know, but that never really resonated with me as a kid. I never connected with that. But I think it was probably, I'm going to stick with the answer I gave, The Whiter Shade of Pale by the Moody Blues.
That'd do it, wouldn't it?
That probably did make, because it was just, I was probably only about 7, and I sort of remember the sense of like, I can't even describe it, but some emotional resonance.
Does it still cut it?
I still think it's a fantastic song.
It's incredible. I still think
it's a fantastic song. It's a fan. I mean, no, I still think it is objectively an absolutely fantastic song.
Yeah, yeah. I think there
that
is.
The way it builds.
Oh.
It's still gets me.
Yeah, that's pure goosebumps, that is. So you mentioned the Carpenters and that kind of sort of sadness. When you hear White Shade of Pale, what was the emotion, if you had to pinpoint it?
God, yeah, I don't know. At that time, I mean, I don't think sadness is the right word. It is a terribly sad song, but you're not conscious of heartbreak or anything like that. I mean, your biggest sadness at that point is, you know, breaking your favourite toy.
Mm.
But I think just a sense of profundity, I suppose, for want of a better word. I think that sense of something being really big.
Mm. I think that sometimes, like, these answers, like, to this specific question, I often think sometimes it's like the first time that music gets you in a different way. Like, because as you said about your son, normally everything's just like Prozac, happy and joyous and, you know, really plinky plonky. And then at some point you just think, oh, this is something else.
Yeah.
What I can't compute this. This doesn't. And like, and it sort of resonates in a different way. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I think most of my answers are along those lines as well, because you only get one first time to have your mind expanded by music. And music does it in a way that nothing else does.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still searching for that. That's why my tastes, I've never really sat still. It's probably why I never really was able to really garner like a particular fan base, because I would change all the time, because I'm always looking for that kind of first thing. And now I'm listening to, like, I mean, my probably favourite record label at the moment is Habibi Funk, because they're just finding the greatest Middle Eastern music that, and it's incredible stuff amongst a sea of absolute dross, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
But I'm always, and it's like that excitement of like, wow, that is a thing. I never knew that was, you know, music could do that, or music was like that, or there was music like that. And I think that it's it goes right back to your first experiences.
Yeah. And touching on what you just said there as well, about, you know, in a sea of stuff that could be pretty naff, you find these little gems. That's the beauty of, you know, whether it be on Spotify or on, you know, Discogs, wherever. It's like, it's crate digging. And
I love it.
And it's just, you know, you have that deep dive and you have to trawl through a lot of shit a lot of the times.
Yeah.
But then you find that absolute little golden nugget and it's like, oh, mate.
Yeah. Like a classic example that a lot of DJs will know if they're in my oeuvre. This is like a classic example of that, right? There's a late 70s Looney Tunes compilation. My son loves the cover because it's got that Looney Tunes logo on it. The music's all blinky plonky, Prozac, happy 70s stuff, right? And right at the end, it's got a Tower of Power song called "There's Only So Much Oil in the Ground." And it is an absolute banger. And the lyrics are all about quite an unchild-friendly topic, you know. I mean, even in the late 70s, the oil's going to run out, you know, what happens then? Environmentalism and stuff. It shouldn't be on that record. I've no idea who signed that to that record.
Yeah.
But I've got, every time I see a copy of that record, I buy one, because it's just such an anomaly. It's a beautiful anomaly that sort of gives you faith in digging.
Love it. Love it. So where was growing up?
Bristol.
Okay. Happy memories of growing up in Bristol?
Yeah, Bristol's Bristol. It's a very special place. I wouldn't necessarily choose for my son to grow up there, because there's a lot of problems. There's a significant amount of social problems there. But in a funny way, that gives it a real, its own energy. Yeah. And it's got a lot of musical pedigree. It's got a lot of cultural pedigree that probably it other cities of its size don't necessarily have, or have in a different way, which gives Bristol a certain attitude. It's quite insular, I would say. There's a lot of, I mean, now I live in London, and I know from growing up that the everybody used to say, oh, that they're London, oh, who do they think they are, you know. And I now know that's not the case. It isn't the fact that this London is some fancy other that thinks it's better than everyone. It's not real.
The streets ain't paved with gold, are they?
No, they're actually not. No. I was really looking forward to that. But, so, yeah, Bristol's got a certain chip on its shoulder, but in a way that's an energy. And I must admit, from a DJing perspective, I moved from Bristol. I got to sort of 31 and thought I just felt like I could do with a different environment. So I moved to Brighton because Brighton is equally a great city. But the first thing I noticed was that in Bristol, everyone dances. As soon as songs come on that they like, everybody's up dancing, whether it's in a bar, a pub, or anywhere. There's just this readiness to sort of go, and I miss that, to be honest, because it doesn't happen so much in Brighton or London, in my experience.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What about at home? Was it a musical household growing up?
No, not really. I mean, my mum's a very good singer. She likes to sing. She sings in a choir. She's got good taste in music. So I grew up listening to sort of Nina Simone, Ray Charles, Sam Cooke. So really great soul singers alongside Carpenters and stuff like that. My dad's absolutely tone deaf. He's a sportsman.
Yeah.
Can't sing for toffee, although he enjoys to try. But yeah. I wouldn't say it was there was nobody playing instruments or anything. I was the only one, but my brother is actually much more musical than I am. He's got a PhD in music composition. So there must've been something in the blood because he's excellent. Now he's a lecturer at the Guildhall doing sound art and stuff. So he's gone on a more academic route. Obviously there must be something in the genes somewhere.
We'll talk about Bristol a little bit more when we get to the track about your home county, and I don't really want to sort of dig too deep into the, you know, because I know what your song pick is, and I don't want to dig too deep into the scene that really smashed Bristol on the musical map around that time.
Right.
But growing up in Bristol, as a young lad, could you feel that it was a musical city and it was a creative city? You know, whether it be through stuff that the Wild Bunch were doing with spray can art and sound system culture, had that filtered through?
Absolutely, 100%. Like, I thought it was normal, but I now know that what I was able to grow up through was abnormal for most cities and most cultures. It was a product of the time. That 90s era was incredibly free, but that Bristol had something special for sure. I went to a school on Bristol Cathedral School, which is in the cathedral in the town centre, and on its doorstep is College Green, which is also where was a big skateboarding haven. I skateboarded there for years and it entered that scene through coming out on lunch breaks and stuff. There was always young, 17, 18 year old guys who for me at 14 were like, absolute like boss men, you know, and they were all in bands, a lot of the punk bands at the time, like Lily Dan White and Boxer Frogs. And there was lots of decent sort of very punk attitude punk bands at the time. Yeah. So really not that Wild Bunch stuff particularly, although it was a very punk style of music as well. There was just there was a real punk attitude running through Bristol in the 90s. And I don't think it's rose tinted looking, but I really do feel that there was an energy which I haven't seen. Bristol's still got a lot of energy. It's still got a lot of sort of punk musical energy.
Fucking hell, look at the weekend. Look at Idols taking the roof off of Glastonbury again.
Big up, Dev.
Big up, Dev. What a lovely, lovely dude.
Oh, I love him.
Last time I went to Bristol was for this podcast to go and sit with Dev and have a pint and a chat with him. What a lovely human he is.
He's lovely. He supports Newcastle, but you can't have it all.
Just before we get on to, I mean, you mentioned school, and we'll get on to that in a sec. But I've had a few guests on recently, and I love it when the word skateboarding gets mentioned because it was so important in my life. And I think, tell me a little bit about your involvement in skateboarding. And I don't even necessarily think that you have to be a great skateboarder, but if you enjoy skating and you find yourself in these spaces, for me, it's got a punk attitude about it. It's entrenched in sort of DIY culture, music, always like hand in hand. I often reference that I found out about so many bands through watching skateboard videos from VHSs that I would go to Camden Market and buy. And be
those old 411 videos, man. The soundtracks on those were just all of them. It was a real joined up thing. I mean, you only have to look at Tony Hawk's skateboarding as a good example, actually. But you know, that then went on to influence Grand Theft Auto and other, but it all came from skateboarding, that marriage of music and physical sort of, you know. But yeah, I started, as I say, I went to school right next to the skateboard center. There was two areas, one Lloyd's, which was around the back of the school, and that was three massive steps. You'll have seen it in skate videos from that era. It was three huge steps that if you were good enough, you could clear. And, you know, some of the skaters were doing, you know, mad stuff, 360 flips and so on. Down all three steps. There was a young lad called Matt Keel, I think his name's Matt Keel, went on to be a pro. And we used to skate with him when I remember my mate Jim doesn't really stop banging on about how we taught him to ollie. He very, very quickly surpassed all of us and just had the gift, as it were. But there was that, and there was College Green, which was right next to, you had the green area, which just all the kids, just loads of kids would just be on every Saturday, every Sunday after school all the time, you know, getting up to a little bit of mischief, but nothing really antisocial, to be honest. There was never fights or anything like that. It wasn't that kind of vibe. It was quite a peaceful and loving, supportive network vibe. And, you know, you'd skate for a bit, go and sit down for a bit, come back, skate for a bit. I'd skate with a lot of the pros, Paul Alexander and the Alexander brothers and Flynn Trotman. Danny Wainwright was always down there. He ran the 50-50 store and was the biggest skater in Bristol. He skated for Powell and Peralta, which is like, I mean, he was skating for an American, like, legendary skate company. So, I mean, he was excellent. I mean, I was never as good as that. I was never going to be pro, and I always knew that. But I loved it. I really loved skating.
Do you still get out on a deck every now and again?
I can go down the road, but I can't really ollie anymore. I can't now. I'm just, my bones have all tightened up. I can't do it anymore.
Well, you mentioned school, so let's move on to track three, which is the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, Ed.
I have to say it's a bit of a switch up, but It was like one of those, again, we've talked about it before. There are songs that just perform a trick on you, and you didn't know music could be like that, and it changes the way you see music going forward from that moment. But it is a very clear, it's like a lightning strike. It's like, sure. Boom. And I was at my friend Drew's party in Easton in Bristol. It was his 14th birthday party, and we were all running around doing knee slides like you do. But his dad was a bit of a bad boy raver and put on some jungle. And I remember at the my first instinct was I'd never heard anything like it. It was in a sports hall sort of thing, so it wasn't exactly like pristine audio quality or anything like that. But the bass, I just didn't know there could be so much bass in music, and I got a stomachache, and that's like, it physically affected me. I was like, I don't know if I'm enjoying this, but once I got over the stomachache, I was just like, wow, wicked jungle is massive. And I was like, is this like the drums, like when you're 14 you're looking for excitement, crazy skittering drums, very electronic sounding. Just didn't know that music could do that. So my song is MB featuring General Livy. Incredible.
What a tune. How was school?
School was all right. I moved around a bit in schools. I was never very well behaved, but I suppose I enjoyed sport, and I probably enjoyed the bits after school more than the bits during school, as it were.
When you say you moved around, like different schools?
Yeah, a few different schools. So I sort of went to, I probably had four different secondary schools.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite a lot, really.
How was that?
That probably was a little bit, probably on a personal level, was a little bit unsettling. I'm not friends with people that I went to school with anymore. I'm friends with people that I hung out with after school still, but I'm not friends with people I went to school with, because I never really stuck long enough to build those kind of unshakable bonds. And actually, I just preferred the people that I hung around with after, because the people I would hang around with after school, in that sort of golden period before your parents get back from work or before you have to be in for your tea, those sort of 2 or 3 hours, those are the people I chose to hang out with. And that's all people that we connected through music. So it's hip hop and punk, and we would listen to music and skate, and, you know, we were really, really obsessed with music. And
having to start new schools, I mean, thankfully I never had to do that. I can only imagine that's a very intimidating situation, first day in a new school. Do you think that gave you a skill set to be able to talk to people?
Definitely.
You do?
Definitely, yeah.
Because it can easily go the other way, can't it? And you can become very introverted. And
yeah, definitely. No, I think for me, just my personality type, it gave me that sense of being able to mix with different types of people and different groups of people. Not saying I took to it like a duck to water, but I think by learning through those experiences, whether it went well or went badly, I think you learn how to kind of gauge social environments and act sort of appropriately. And sometimes you choose, I think, to deliberately not, because you're like, well, I could, but I choose not to in this instance.
Yeah.
But I think I think it's given me that ability.
Wonderful. What did you want to be when you was at school?
It's a good question. I don't know. I can't remember what. I don't know, really.
What was you good at?
Quite good at sport. Quite good at sport, but then I sort of gave up sport. I played for the county at a few sports. I'm from a sporting background. So I definitely, growing up, it was just sport, 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 any sport, all sports, cricket and tennis particularly I was good at. And I still play tennis and I still play cricket when I can, but probably had ambitions to like take it somewhere. But then, music and street culture got hold of me, I suppose. And I think after that point, I wanted to be a musician and probably... Yeah, I mean, or some, they're always creative, wanted to be creative. So either I wanted to be a musician or a film director. I think I had a very naive idea that I would write a script, send it to somebody. They'd go, wow, you are brilliant. Do you want to direct a Hollywood movie?
But there's something lovely about that kind of, ambition that is a very short period of your life where, you know, it's all to be played for and you feel that anything's like there. And and then obviously life catches up and you realise it's all just quite miserable, really. But but that sweet spot where you do think like, yeah, I could just do that and then that'd happen. That's the best time.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. I think about that, I went to university, did a film and creative writing degree, which has stood me well because I'm still creating content, I'm still writing, I'm now a writer. So, you know, it definitely was the right thing to do. But at that time, while sort of supposed to be doing my homework or whatever you call it, I can't remember what you call it at university, it's not homework anymore. But bought some decks off of a mate. They were all belt drive ones that you had to, like, if you touch them, they... So you had to learn a really tight, delicate sort of control of the turntable. I had a mixer that wasn't a scratch mixer, but I sort of taught myself roughly how to do some bits and bobs. Actually ended up being, I mean, when I learned football when I was 6 or 7, the school I was at, in a very small playground, so you had to play with a tennis ball. And actually, you actually end up with a better sort of catch from those sort of, limitations. I got some turntables from a friend and started playing records and entered a DJ competition. I don't know why. I must have thought I was doing all right, but started getting some routines together, entered a DJ, and I won it. I was like the first person on at sort of 2 o'clock when there was nobody there. And then they went right through till 10, 11 p.m. when the pub shut and then announced me as the winner. And people were like booing because they were like, why? Nobody's seen him play.
How good's that, though?
What's that?
Like, winning that. That's incredible, right?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Yeah. It was. There was some guys there that went on to be quite big in the drum and bass game and stuff. So it was not a bad field to. But I had a nice routine. I was very inspired by DJ Yoda back then. So it had a little bit of charity shop sort of oddball.
Well, when you mentioned the Looney Tunes thing, I thought of Yoda straight away.
Yeah, definitely.
But and big up to DJ Yoda. Go check out that episode he's been on, and it's a wonderful nap.
I haven't seen him since university. Actually, he won't remember me, but I remember him. I actually emceed on support for him. I had a brief period. I've done a little bit of rapping in my life, and I've been on a few different records and done a few. But then I just, it's one of those things. I pick it up and put it down, and there's 7 or 8 years in between. That's a funny one.
Oh,
I think it's
love
just being
it.
A writer, being creative. I just, there's sometimes that I channel it in that way. I don't know. It doesn't
happen. Yeah, but it's good, isn't it? And I think that if you're going to try and sort of pursue, you know, a creative career, I think you do need to be able to spin a few plates, because one of the things that generally isn't in abundance in the creative industry is wages. So you do need to be able to, like, right, well, if I do that set there, then, well, you know, I'm going to put me EP out. I might be able to nick a bit of money from that. And then, you know, I'll go and MC that. And it's like, and it, you know, at the end of the month, you look at the pot and you think, oh, I can pay the bills.
Just about, and like,
And I think that there's something beautiful about that as well, because it's for the love, isn't it? And it's for, you know, the excitement of doing something and creating something. And I think there's a lot of value to be put on that. Unfortunately, it's never really financial value. That never seems to come.
No, that is the thing. I mean, you know, you have sort of, you're quite naive when you go into it. And you learn over time that, you know, it's not what you thought it was.
Yeah.
But I mean, I I still love a New York hip hop artist called Edan. I don't know if you know.
He's signed to the same label as Yoda.
Oh, right, is he?
So my mate Mike runs the label, and just to throw this out there, I spent years trying to put a record out. I was in bands and all sorts of stuff throughout the 90s, and then 3 years ago I released an album with DJ Yoda. It's a podcast, but it got released on Yoda, or on Mike's label. Oh God, I'm trying to remember what it's bloody called now. Any of you listening to this as well? Oh my God.
Check that out.
But yeah, and it's Yoda doing his top 5 hip hop records, and we released it on picture disc as well. Back to the Bambaataa thing, it's all based. It's me, my co-host, and Yoda in that kind of Renegades of Funk kicking through the wall animated thing. So
nice.
I don't know why I've just thumbed in that big up myself for that. But let's get back to you. And also, I never made Lewis Recordings, by the way. Eden, he was talking about Eden as well. So, yeah, he's on Lewis Recordings. Go on, go back to that. Sorry, I interrupted you myself.
It's all good. Yeah, so I suppose what I was going to say was that, that I very much admired not only Eden as an artist, but as a performer. I've seen him play and he's brought his kazoo out and he's got his acoustic guitar out and stuff, and he's got a nice DJing style where and he's done video mixes, and he's very creative, very sort of whole process. And I've always been quite drawn to that because I get bored quite quickly, so I want to do a bit of everything. I could never be a drum and bass DJ, and that's what I do. And I respect people that do that. There's literally no question. It's not anything to do with thinking that my approach is in any way better. It just wouldn't suit me to have a sort of a particular focus and just do that until it was done. Just isn't me. So I always looked at people like Eden and thought, he's rapping and DJing and producing the beats and, you know, doing a bit of this and even, you know, animations over the top and stuff. And I suppose that's inspired me to try my hand at most things within the music game.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Absolutely.
I mean, to the point, now I do a lot of, actually now I don't get the time anymore, but I used to do a lot of modular synth stuff. So I taught myself how modular synths work and semi-modular synths and Moogs and stuff like that. And that in a funny way, I love the fact that sometimes the machines and the process can take you somewhere completely different than what you thought you'd be doing. So suddenly it's all gone very bleepy bloopy. And I'm like, I never thought I'd be making that, but I'm enjoying it. So
what you mean that, is that part of your DJ set or are you just talking about making music now?
No, I mean, I've never actually performed it live. I've done a lot of videos on YouTube of it as live.
Yeah.
Because it was a lockdown thing as well. But got really into the different patching different synths together and synths without keyboards with just funny sequences and stuff like that. And it's a completely different way of working than I'd ever worked before, which is, again, it must be just that sort of restlessness, but I just really wanted to, like, I just got really inspired by what happens when you put this with that and that with this and, you know, can you make it sound nice? Because it starts off live and it's pure just electricity. It's just, you know, can I make into music somehow? It's a fun challenge, but it's completely different. I mean, I got probably my most success, if you want to call it that, as an artist for funk and soul records.
Yeah.
And so it couldn't be further away really from that, but That's what I like.
That's what makes you an artist, you know, that, you know, you want to explore everything you can and try and make exciting things out of, you know, whatever you're presented with. Yeah, I love that, man. Look, we spoke about, you know, patching in, you know, analog synths and modular synths, sorry, and DJ Yoda and all sorts of cool shit. Let's just put that on ice for a minute. What's the first song you remember buying from a record shop, Ed?
What a segue.
You've got everybody on board thinking you're this cool cat, man, and I'm just going to pull the rug from under you now.
Listen, I've got to be truthful. I've got to speak my truth. I'd been to Swindon Oasis in Swindon, obviously. I don't know if you know what Swindon Oasis is. It's a big water park.
Oh, okay.
And it's the one that if you're brave enough at like 11, you'll go on the Great White. That was the big one. And it's the one that a lot of kids are like, you know, those ones, all these kids are standing up there and then they don't actually go down and they bottle out. And so I was very proud. I think I went down that day. I know I definitely didn't the first couple of times I went.
Yeah.
But it was a bit of everyone, you know, all the kids went there in the holidays. And after that, can't remember why, I think I managed to convince my mum that we could go into an old record shop. Might have been Our Price, mm-hmm. possibly an old Our Price. And this was in the era of cassettes. Cassettes mm-hmm. was the dominant media. CDs hadn't really come in yet, and vinyl was seen as passé. And nobody had everyone had those like double cassette deck, high speed dubbing ghetto blaster thing.
Oh, I've been trying to buy one of them, Ed, and like there's so much money.
They're not cheap. No.
Trawling eBay and like just can't seem to any ones that you think, that seems quite cheap, says tape deck doesn't work. And you think,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're collectibles now. So then I was in there and I'd been off. I'm really making excuses for myself here. I'd been off sick from school the week before.
Oh, so he wasn't thinking clearly either, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was very
hallucinating in Our Price. So sick.
And because I'd been off sick, I was allowed to watch morning TV. And it's not like it is today where you've got 15 channels of kids stuff.
Yeah.
It was the grown-ups TV. That's all there was. So watching Pebble Mill and this bunch of lads came on in matching leotards and started doing choreographed dance moves. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a bit exciting. And they were talking about it, like they're going to be the next big thing. And I thought, oh, wow. So when I saw Take That, It Only Takes a Minute Girl mm-hmm. in the cassette shop, I thought, oh, I'm going to buy that. So I did.
Yeah. Makes a good song, right?
It's all right, yeah, well, I suppose, yeah.
It's Barry Manilow, right?
It's what?
It's a Barry Manilow song, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a cover. I didn't know that at the time, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea. No idea at all.
I mean, your first record, if you would have come on here and said, well, I was listening to John Peel and I bought this obscure 7-inch by The Fall, I wouldn't have entertained it. I love the fact that people are honest on this track. I think it was like the second ever episode I'd done, I had Russell Lissack, a Block Party, on. And I thought, I wonder if Russell's going to try and be too cool for school. And I went, what's the first record you bought, Russ? And he went, Stiltskin. I thought, brilliant. That's it.
That was my second, actually.
Oh, really?
The second time I went to a record shop, I bought Stiltskin Inside.
That's the one.
Oh, yeah. Still love it. It's a bit of a tune, though, that. I still like that.
It was the Levi's ad, wasn't it?
It was.
That
it
was desperately that was trying to be Smashing Pumpkins as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like a mixture of Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins, yeah.
Do you know what the singer does now?
No.
So the singer from them, up until the last gigs, fronted Genesis.
No way.
Mm. Until Phil Collins come back for this last tour, yeah. He was singing in Genesis.
Well, there you go.
Nerdy fact for you there.
You've got to have a diverse portfolio at all stages of the game.
Absolutely. Spinning the plates, mate. Spinning the plates.
Yeah.
Well, look, Ed, you've been honest on there. So I'm going to ask you, was there two for this one?
Oh, yeah. Well, there was, because I did buy two cassettes at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So I also bought two unlimited ready for this.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I mean, they're super catchy pop gems, right? That if you're a young lad or a young lady, they're going to just resonate, right?
Everyone knows it.
Yeah.
Super catchy.
Absolutely. Well, look, I'll give you an opportunity to be a bit more cool again there. So tell me a little bit about, as you got older, your relationship with the record shop.
Well, that's a great question. I'm going to enjoy answering that because I spent every Saturday from the age of 14 in Replay Records down in the Haymarket in Bristol. And because we were penniless little 14-year-old kids, but passionate, desperately passionate about music, we had we and Replay were, rest in peace, Replay, brilliant record shop, always had really knowledgeable staff. It was the golden age of record shops, I would say, in certainly in my lifetime. And they would help us find stuff, or we'd do that thing where you'd buy one record and you'd look at the bands on the back who they thank. And you'd go, oh, they thank, right. So then you'd connect the dots and then you go, right, we're going to try those. And you could listen. So we'd literally spent all day there smoking cigarettes outside and then come in, and then you could try the records on the turntable, have a listen. And then we'd talk about it. And we'd basically, what we'd end up doing is we thought we were geniuses. And I suppose in a sense, you know, we got more music for our buck, but because we didn't have very much money, we might be able to like pull together and buy a record. Then we'd go home and tape it. And this is a difference to what the younger people today are doing with their music. We would buy one record, we'd sit in a room and we would listen to it maybe four or five times, including the songs that we didn't like, and then they might grow on you, which might evolve your musical taste, which might change the way you perceive things. Kids these days, they don't have that. They have 20 seconds. If they don't like it, they skip it, which I think is a bit sad.
Absolutely.
But we would literally obsess over lyrics. We would we'd quite often steal the record inners that you'd get in the records. And I'm sure the staff knew what we were doing and just let us get on with it because, you know, but we were really passionate. And so we'd maybe get one record or two records if we could pull enough money together. And these would all be secondhand, you know, secondhand records. And then we'd tape it, and then we'd, you know, dub a few tapes, so we all had a tape of it. And then when you've got three or four of these records, you can take them back and exchange them for enough money to get another one. So we have had, I would say, my friends and I through that time have sort of been custodians of some absolutely priceless records that we've then sold back for £25, like, you know, £4.10 or something like that, you know. Some of the Nirvana stuff. So honestly, some of the records that we had through our possession that we then just sold back would be worth hundreds, if not more now.
Oh, the amount of times, like, as becoming a DJ like yourself, I got on the promo list and I'd get sent all of these promos.
Nice, yeah.
And the amount of them that I would just take down to the music exchange and sell for nothing, just because as a DJ I weren't earning a lot of money, and it was like, well, I'm never going to play these, I'll just sell them. And like, oh, some of the stuff that I sold, some I just think, stuff. Why did I do that?
Yeah.
Okay, moving forward to track five. Tell me the song that soundtracked your years clubbing, please, Ed.
Well, clubbing for me was drum and bass, because that was the era. It was like that 98, 97, 98. I was 17 when I first really went clubbing. I mean, you said rock clubs and stuff, but I don't consider that. That's not clubbing. That's like kind of youth clubbing, really. It's like back in the day, age restrictions were not very well enforced. So we were going at 15, 14 and you know, fun. But and the music was important, but it wasn't as much of it wasn't this sort of all-encompassing total experience that it was when we went raving. And I think raving for me was drum and bass. That was the dominant musical style of the city, and it was what my friends were into, and it's what I learned to DJ, really. And I wasn't very good when I started. Some of my friends were much better than me, but just that beat matching, that regular kind of, and you're just matching that, get those times together. Usually sounds like galloping horses, of course, but you know, we would get all the records, we'd practice, we'd all get together and big group of us drive our, you know, I think it was me and a few others that had moved out of home at that point. And so we had our own places. And of course that's like absolute mecca for everyone. Probably drove, our housemates and neighbours insane. But then you can't even do that anymore. But and Bristol was unbelievably tolerant to like party noise.
Yeah.
Different to anywhere else I've ever experienced. Unbelievably tolerant in certain areas, the areas where we lived, sort of St. Paul's and Montpellier and Easton and stuff. Drum and bass was our thing. And when we were old enough to get into the raves, that's what we started doing. We had a couple of our friends MC'd at them and stuff. And I could have picked really any 97 to 99 drum and bass track I like the simple ones, so Aphrodite with a really simple kind of like 16th beats and Ed Rush and Optical. There's so many. I mean, Ronnie Size was a reasonably near neighbour. And actually, I remember walking down the street, I didn't really know what I was hearing at the time, but the house where he lived was where the Full Cycle crew lived or congregated. And they made Represent in that house, and it was so loud. It was at the bottom of a hill over a valley, bottom of Hurlingham Road, over a hill, over a valley, and you could hear it for miles around. And you just walk past the house and you're like, what is that? I mean, it's like the very beginnings of Brown Paper Bag and stuff, and you're like, wow. You hear it blaring out of someone's house, and you've never heard anything like it. Yeah. You're just like, what? And then a few months later, it's, you know, on Radio 1 and stuff like that, and you're just like, it's mad. But one of those crew, DJ Crust, I've picked this song because it was one that we all loved. It was one of the ones that I connected with. But I think I've picked it particularly because I remember a moment at the Thekla Club in Bristol when I was probably 18 or 19 and raving and you know, really into it, shall I say. And it was just, I had a funny moment with him. And I was like, is this real? Is this happening? I'm not sure. But he was DJing. And I'm not being, this sounds weird. And maybe it was all in my head. I honestly couldn't tell you. But our eyes locked over the dance floor and in sort of respect, like a respectful kind of connection. And we just retained eye contact for throughout this track. And, you know, it does sound weird. And I still don't know if it was in my head or not, but I definitely felt like I was experiencing a moment with him, and it was great. I got to know him a little bit after that, and he's a really nice bloke as well. So it's DJ Crust, Warhead. I've gone for the Stepper remix, but the original's just as good, really.
Lovely. Well, look, we've spoke about Bristol so much, so for track six, I'm going to ask you please to tell me a favourite song from an artist from your hometown, please.
Yeah, well, I just, Bristol has been very seminal in my life. It's, you know, there's no getting away from that. And the scene's incredible, or certainly was. I could have picked a number of different songs. It was quite hard to choose. I think I ended up going for this one because of the use of the Jack Jones sample in it. Andy Smith was on the decks for that one. And I got to know him a little bit through DJing with him and stuff over the years as well. But I don't think I'd honestly that I almost chose the start of that Portishead album for my intro because that ding, 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 ding. And then the way the drums come in, I mean, that is an absolute banger of an intro. And again, you'd never heard anything like it. This was just the era of firsts in so many ways, and partly because of my age, but also just if you look back at music, 91 to 94 is one of the most freshest explosions of sound I think there's ever been in music.
It's quite strange. I mean, if you look at what was happening in, I guess, in hip-hop and you know, you mentioned sort of drum and bass and then whether you want to call it trip hop or whatever that scene you want to call it, all exploded then. And that's without even thinking about what was happening in guitars. You know, in guitars, you look at what was happening in 91, 92 in America that just dominated, you know, the music scene. You know, you've got bands like, obviously you've got Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden and Sonic Youth, but probably just as big, if not bigger, like REM were arguably one of the sort of biggest bands on the planet, you know? Mm. And then, you know, all of this guitar music was just at the forefront of, you know, and, you know, you watch the MTV Awards and look at what the Prodigy were doing then, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and you sort of, wait, I think it was, excuse me. But if you look at when did Jilted come out? Jilted must have been what, 92?
92. I'm going to say 92.
Yeah. Fucking hell, man.
I mean, that was, I would nearly put that in my sort of song that changed, you know, had an emotional sort of resonance. Because I kind of, is it Descent? I'm descending from outer space. Is that the lyric?
Out of space?
From outer space.
That's
incredible.
For me, because that come out, like, they're Essex boys, obviously. And so we're fiercely proud of them. We ain't got a lot.
Right.
But when the experience come out and you know, Out of Space, Wind It Up and stuff like that, and Charlie, it almost felt a bit novelty because there were so many sort of like hardcore records that were coming out that were like using Sesame Street and using lots of Looney Tunes stuff and kind of just getting quick hits, really. And obviously the Prodigy done that with Charlie, but then obviously there was more to them than that.
Well, there was, and I think this isn't something that you're able to be conscious of when you're 11 or 12 and hearing it for the first time. But looking back now, Liam was everyone knows this. This is not a revelation, but he technically a genius. Like, what he was able to do technically was far beyond what anyone else was capable of, even in the big studios at that time. He was, respect, absolutely incredible.
And I think it would have been 92, maybe, when Jilted come out. And obviously loving Voodoo People and No Good Dance and stuff like that. But when I heard Poison, I was like, whoa. Like, and you realised he was going to start to experiment with his love of hip-hop. And then obviously fast forward to the next record and the beats were just from outer space. Like, nobody could touch him at that point. Like, ridiculous.
Respect.
Well, we're not talking Essex, sorry. I've just dragged it into Essex again now. Let's go back to Bristol. And
about the love of great music, really. Bristol, I suppose, the track I've gone for, I mean, they could have gone for so many. I mean, I was thinking something more modern, like Addison Groove. Changa is an absolute banger. Big ups, Tony. I lived with him for a few year or so. And at that moment, he was going from Headhunter to Addison Groove because he came home from tour with an original 808 drum machine and just it changed him. And do you know the song Foot Crab?
Yeah.
He did that in upstairs while I was downstairs.
Wow.
in the same house. And he went, "Ad, what do you think of this?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's pretty good, mate, to be honest." And he's done all right as well. I was really thinking about Changa because I really like his track Changa, and I think it's a little bit. I was sort of tempted to go with something that isn't just from that era of music that everyone knows about in Bristol. But again, it's that you only get the first time to hear something once, and you're never more receptive than when you're in that teenage phase or age range. And so for me, it's Only You. Beth's voice is unbelievable. Nobody was singing like her at that time. The production, the drummer is just he used to teach drums at Filton High School and played a lot in the jazz bands and stuff, and he's just ridiculous. If you watch him play jazz, it's just ridiculously good. And had that sound, the production, everything. And then I think just that use of that Jack Jones sample just right at the end of the song. A lot of the times people were using samples really from the beginning, just straight in sample and then cutting it a bit, and it was all part of the chorus. But this, they just waited for that emotional build up, and then I feel so cold, and whoa, goosebumps, man. So yeah, Only You, Portishead.
Perfect. Right. I'm going to sort of reach out to the DJ in you and give you an opportunity to be tastemaker and you can dig the crates for people. So this is a song that you think many people may not know and you want them to hear.
Yeah. All right. Good. I'm glad I understood the question correctly because I didn't quite. Yeah. Anyway. This would be the one that I would always say. It isn't. It is one of those ones that if you know, you know, but a lot of people don't know. Tame Impala and a singer, I can't remember his name, I'm sorry, begins with T. Can't remember his name, but they did a cover of it. So that sort of brought it to a bit more awareness. But I still would say, and you know, Al Kent's done an edit of it. It's been out on Soundway. Both versions that they ended up doing. I mean, it's a weird one. There's two versions of this song on the same album that I've got in my collection behind me. And they're both the same song, but just different interpretations, which, yeah, given that it's in 1984, wasn't really what people were doing then, especially when it's more, this is like live band electronica or electro. It's disco, really, but it's very synth heavy. It's from Ghana or Nigeria. It's West Africa, anyway. I'm going to stick with Ghana, but it could be Nigeria. Guy's called Steve Manite. And for me, it is the best bass line of all time, bar none. Fight me. The song's called, it's also called Only You. That's a peculiarity, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Weird.
Well, it's an absolute beauty. And what we do is we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast so people can go and explore that.
I think we should put both versions on there.
Let's do that.
Because one of them's got this amazing female vocal, and it's so cheesy, but it also is just genius. And, you know, the bass line and the synth work just carries it all off.
Lovely, lovely. Well, people can go and explore all of them tracks, and I'll make sure I put both versions on there. So, aside from, you know, the day job and sponsoring this podcast, what's the plans for the rest of the year? I know that you've dipped your toe back into a little bit of DJing recently. Yeah. Is there going to be more of that? What's happening with the music?
I mean, that's a very interesting question, and I honestly don't know. I did a record store day event at the local record shop around here, Level Crossing Records. Big up. Which was really, really enjoyable. Played for 3 hours, all vinyl, all sort of dancing music from around the world. I never quite know what to call it. It's not any one sound, but really love being able to just do what I feel like doing. And I think these days I'm not looking for DJ gigs where I'm expected to stay in a certain box or have a certain style. I just want to be as self-indulgent as I choose to be, really. Yeah. Do it for myself, really. So, you know, if the right gig comes up and if it fits around family and stuff, but it's a very different approach to what, when I was trying to pay my rent with it, you take every gig available and you say, okay, you want me to play pop? I'll play some pop. I'll do this wedding. You know, I used to do a residency, a Latino bar. And so I just collect a load of Latino music and play that, you know, and you do whatever. But I don't need, I'm not, that's not where I'm at now. So if the right gigs come along, I loved it. I must admit, it reminded me why I love DJing. So, yeah, definitely that. You know, I've got a sort of a different life now, and I love it. I'm really happy. So I'm not like, and I'm jaded and I'm beaten by the industry in some ways. The music industry is tough. I don't know if I'd recommend it to my son necessarily,
yeah,
but the love of music is eternal. So you kind of, sometimes being in the industry is what spoils your love of music. In some cases, not always, but I think definitely unless you're extremely thick skinned, trying to be an artist or a performer, it can sometimes, there can be as many downs as there are ups. So I'm not looking for that anymore, which puts me in an interesting position because I've got probably two complete albums that I'm really proud of that I think is probably my best ever work. But I don't have the appetite or the time or the money to really push them. And I don't necessarily want to put them out on Bandcamp and have four people listen to it and then just say, well, because I've put a lot of work into it.
Of course.
So I don't know. I'm in an interesting position. If any record labels listening want to do all the work for me, then get in touch.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, we should also add that we're going to be working together moving forwards with both Off the Beaten Track and with Pop Bible Magazine, the publication that I've put together with Adam Richardson, Scroobius Pip. We're going to be doing some Once to Watch shows where we're going to be showcasing new and exciting podcasts at a what appears to be like a little sort of secret venue owned by Hotel Chocolat. Not many people know about it. And it's a beautiful little space. So we're going to be putting together some shows there. And you heard it here first. I think we're going to do a live off the beaten track on one of them nights. So
We're looking at sort of September time for that in Covent Garden in London. So anyone near there? It's a beautiful space. It's a really intimate little venue, and there's chocolate making machinery around you, and there's a great bar. It's and a good sound system. They're gonna be great events. Can't wait for that.
Absolutely. And if people want to find out and listen to music that you've done or DJ sets, is there anywhere you direct people to go and explore?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a lot of stuff. I'm going to say my Don Dayglo stuff. I've done stuff as Don Dayglo and Don Dayglo and the Electric Dead Band, which is all me. So if you go on Spotify and find that, you'll find I've got an album, an EP, a few EPs that I've done. Different styles of music, mostly electronic, sort of somewhere between disco and housey and electronica. Some very ambient stuff. But yeah, I'm please go and have a listen. I don't get many listeners, so come and help my numbers a bit. I've done some stuff as You and Whose Army. That was my probably when I was doing whatever you want to call it, success. When I was having some success and touring, playing internationally and stuff, was under the name You and Whose Army, which was much more funk and soul and turntablism and stuff. But I'm on Mixcloud and Soundcloud and Spotify and all the places. Not very active anymore. You can watch my weird synthy bloop stuff on YouTube as well if you want to.
And what's that as?
That's just Don Dayglo. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Oh, I've got a record label as well called Particle Zoo Recordings as well. So if we've put out some much better artists than me on that on that label. Definitely worth checking out our catalogue. There's some great stuff on there.
Wonderful. And it's been an absolute joy chatting to you, mate.
Yeah, real pleasure. Thank you. Brightened up my Friday morning.
Lovely. Thanks ever so much, mate. There you go. Ah, that was great. Like, I knew that it'd be a good chat because every time I've kind of hung out with Ad, we've just nattered and nattered and nattered about music. And we've got lots of kind of mutual friends that are DJs and things like that. So the conversation, like right from the very moment I met him, was it's really good when you meet someone and it's outside the music capacity. You know, I was meeting him, you know, because he's at Hotel Chocolat and obviously they sponsor us. So I was meeting him to discuss that. And then once that kind of conversation enters into that, all right, you do a bit of DJing. All right, you're into music. Oh, what? And then that's it. It's like everything else gets parked up and you're just bunnying away for ages about, you know, your favourite records and producers and such. And it's lovely when you find people like that because, it's a lovely conversation, which has translated into an amazing podcast. So I hope you had as much joy as I did listening to Adam talking about his record choices and his career in music. And, yeah, thank you very much for listening. Anything else you need to know, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Other than that, I'm back next time. It's International Chocolate Day. Go eat some chocolate. Pop into your local Hotel Chocolat and, get stuck in. Other than that, check out the boozy stuff, the boozy Hotel Chocolat stuff. Honestly, you've heard me banging on about it on this and so many of my other podcasts. It is glorious. My little tip, the mint chocolate one. Oh. Game changer. I'm back next time. See you soon. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.